A lot of guns, and guys who aren't afraid to use them. You're not making a great case for leaving. I'm not saying that. I'm thinking we should go, but I think we should head... He hesitated. North. North? Tom, it's going to snow. It's already freezing out there. Yes, that's the point. People will move south and west, not north. They'll go where it's warmer. Tom, the only thing north of us is Superior. Not if we head into Minnesota. For a second, she was speechless. Minnesota? You want to go to Minnesota? Tom, that's hundreds of miles. According to the ranger maps, it's about 500 miles to the border. The border? You mean Canada? That's nuts! You want to go farther north into Canada at the beginning of winter? Lot fewer people. More territory for the people who are left to spread out. There'll be fish in the lakes, plenty of game if we stay out of the mountains. Come spring, we can grow things. Tom, you're making a lot of assumptions about what we can and can't do. I don't know anything about farming, and I'll bet you don't either. We're not talking acres of wheat or corn. I'm saying we find ourselves a safe place, and then we grow enough to live on. We can do that. People do it all the time. My parents always had a garden. Alex, if things are really as bad as what we've heard, it's not like anyone's going to be driving to the local grocery store anymore. That means we learn to fend for ourselves. I'm not saying it'll be easy. I think it will be more difficult than we can imagine, but not facing up to that won't help us. I know that, she said, a little irritated now. Okay, say you're right. Even if this was a good idea, and I'm not sure that it is, we've got Ellie to think about. Hugh and I might make it, but you can't expect Ellie to hike that kind of distance, sleep out in the snow. The Rangers only left 2 pairs of snowshoes and cross-country skis, and none fit Ellie. That means we'll have to carry her or figure out some kind of sled. Best case scenario, we wouldn't make it for almost 2 months, and that's if it doesn't snow. No way we won't run out of food. An awful lot of people are dead, Alex. He said quietly, they died weeks ago, in the first few minutes. Assuming you can trust rumors. He pushed through her objection. That means a lot of abandoned houses and plenty of supplies, provided no one's gotten there first. It's still really far. Think of how long it took us to make it here. She saw how his face had changed. What? We might have wheels. Her mouth unhinged. What? That truck in the garage. It's pretty old. I think it might actually work. I just haven't... He punctuated with a shrug. Oh my God, she said. You mean we could drive? Why didn't you say anything? A couple reasons. Once the snow flies and it gets more than 8 inches a foot, we'll be dead in the water, even with chains, and there won't be snowplows. There's also fuel to worry about. We've got some here, but in-ground tanks work on electric pumps. No electricity, no way to get gas. But there'll be a lot of abandoned trucks and cars, right? We'll siphon off what we need. Tom, in a truck, 500 miles is almost nothing. We could be there in 10 or 12 hours. We could go anywhere. Under normal circumstances. But how much you want to bet that the roads are parking lots? Everything stopped moving all at once. If what we heard on the radio is right, then a lot of people flat out died, just like Stan. That means bodies, lots of them. Where there are bodies, there are going to be scavengers, and I'm not just talking wild dogs. There'll be raccoons, opossums, foxes, wolves, maybe bears. All those cars mean we'll be spending half our time just trying to clear the road. Eventually, we'll run into something too big to move, and then we walk.
What if we stay away from major roads?
Yeah, but remember that Spielberg movie, War of the Worlds? Remember what happens when they try driving past all those people without wheels? They nearly get killed, and then they lose the van and end up with nothing. That's how the real world is, Alex. That's what'll happen if we take the truck. There is nothing near what you think of as civilized out there. Everything is different. She saw his point. She really did. She had, after all, seen the same movie.
If we're too freaked out to leave, then this isn't any better than a prison.
He was quiet a few moments. What if we run into more of them? She knew what he meant.
Maybe they're all dead by now. It's cold. They've probably frozen to death.
Then she thought, yeah, but if a brain-zapped ranger did set that booby trap, they might be a lot smarter than they look. This assumed there were more brain-zapped kids out there. Panicky radio broadcasts fueled by rumors weren't facts, although they believed everything else, so why not that? Jim, he reminded her, gave me the slip for more than 2 days. If there were more of those zapped kids or adults, I wouldn't count them all out.
Well, she said, maybe we shouldn't count us out either.
Maybe not, he said. But those radio guys made it sound like the people who survived are scared of kids. Of us. That means we're the enemy. We're the threat. We'll be lucky they don't shoot us on sight. Ellie was not as unhappy as Alex had expected her to be, even when Tom sat the girl down and explained how things might be very different once they ran into other people. To Ellie, Tom was a soldier, as her father had been. Tom had saved them once before and would save them again. Over the next 2 days, Alex re-inventoried their supplies, decided what they should bring, and if it came down to it, if they lost the truck or got bogged down in snow, who would carry what. Tom worked on the truck, and Ellie stuck close, shadowing Tom, handing over tools. When Tom cranked the starter, they were rewarded with a series of heavy metallic clatters and coughs before the truck settled down to a throaty rattle. Tom and Ellie gave each other high fives, and Ellie crowed to Alex, "And now we got wheels!" That night, after grilled steaks and baked potatoes, Tom asked, "What do you know about hunting, setting traps, that kind of thing?" She handed him a plate to dry. "Well, I know how to shoot. I've done skeet. I know how to make a deadfall." He made a face. "That's okay if you don't mind hamburger. How about bow hunting?" When she shook her head, he said, "Tomorrow we go out with the bow. You know how to change a tire or drive a stick?" "Why are we talking about this?" "Because," opening the cupboard, he replaced the dried plates, "if something happens to me or we get separated somehow, you need to know these things." She stared at him for a long moment.
"Nothing's going to happen to you."
It was, in fact, much more likely that something would happen to her. She wondered again when she would tell him. "Believe me, I'd just as soon not go anywhere either, but I want you guys to have the best shot at making it. With that logic, you ought to be teaching Ellie how to handle a gun. If something can happen to you, it can happen to both of us.
Then she'd be all alone."
She could tell he wasn't thrilled with the idea, and added,
"She doesn't have to carry one, but she should know."
"Okay, there's a Browning buck mark. That'd be good to start with." "So," he carefully folded his dish towel, "leave in 2 days?" She nodded.
"Sounds like a plan."
Chapter 29
"But I've already got a knife," Alex said. It was early morning 2 days later. The sky was still very dark, almost cobalt blue to the north, where the snow must be falling.
They were in the front room, their gear and provisions already packed onto the Ford's flatbed. Alex looked down at the top of Tom's head as he fiddled with her boot.
"I'll never remember it."
"The beauty of a boot knife is that no one thinks to look for it unless you blouse your pants or tuck the cuffs into your boots, which you don't." Tom gave the right leg of her hiking pants a stiff tug. "How's it feel?"
"Like I've got something clipped onto my boot." "Tom, I've got the Mossberg, and there's the Beretta from the safe. You've got your Winchester and a Sig, and there's the Browning, and we've got the bow."
"Which you did very well with, by the way."
"Like you,"
said Ellie, appearing at the door. Her arms were full of green wool, blankets for the dog.
"What?"
asked Tom.
"Who?" said Alex. "It's a Quincy.
Anime?"
"And manga,"
Ellie added. "Oh, well, I know Helsing," said Tom.
"You would," said Ellie. "They all use guns, except for Alucard. He likes guns and rips people's heads off."
"What can I say? My kind of guy."
"Great,"
Alex rolled her eyes.
"Tom, I don't know how to fight with a knife."
"And with any luck, you won't have to. In fact, you'll probably just end up getting yourself killed, so I wouldn't recommend it.
So what good is it?
Ask the bad guy you stab when he least expects it.
You just said I'll get myself killed.
Not if the first stab's so good you don't have to do it again. He pushed to his feet. Come on, relax. I was joking.
She's not laughing,
said Ellie.
This is for just in case, said Tom.
You say that a lot,
Alex said, because I mean it.
He ran a critical eye over her body and then shook his head. There's still something missing, he said, patting around his pockets. Just give me a sec.
Ah, he pulled out a holstered handgun. I knew I had this on me for a reason.
She knew what it was before her shaking fingers pulled the Glock free. The magazine was missing, but there was no mistake.
My dad's... Tom, where... How?
Hey, cool, you fixed it, said Ellie. Tom made me promise not to say anything. We went back for it the morning after... You know, Tom said you wouldn't wake up, and Mina would protect you, so I showed him where I dropped it.
You went into the water?
Alex asked, incredulous.
Not me, said Ellie. It was way deep and really cold. Tom got it, though. It only took him 4 tries.
I didn't want to say anything until I had a chance to take it apart, clean it, get it back in working order. Ellie told me it was your dad's. I figured you would want to have it, and it's a perfectly fine weapon. Here. He held up the Glock's magazine. The extra's still in your fanny pack, and I tossed a couple bricks into our gear, too.
Thank you.
She carefully butted the magazine into place.
I mean that, Tom.
I know. He held her gaze for a long moment, then said, Best jack around into the chamber before you safety that thing.
Just in case,
she said.
So do I get a knife?
Ellie asked. Tom and Alex looked at each other, and then Alex said,
You started this.
Okay, okay, Tom said. You can have a knife, Ellie, only yours is going to be a regular old knife.
What? Ellie cried. That's not fair. How come she gets a boot knife and I don't?
And I want it on your belt, in the sheath, thumb guard on at all times.
I can't even use it?
Ellie looked unhappy.
Then what good is it?
If you need to skin a rabbit or whittle a fish hook, I'll show you. It's like when I showed you how to work the gun. It's just in case.
Yeah,
Ellie grumbled.
If it's for just in case, how come you guys look like you're going to war?
No one had a good answer for that. They piled into the truck with Ellie between Alex and Tom. Tom slotted the ignition key and paused. Not too late to change our minds.
No, let's go.
Ellie twisted around to peer out the cab's rear window.
You sure Mina will be okay? Even with the crate, it's awfully cold.
With all those blankets and a fur coat to boot, she'll be fine.
Okay.
Should we maybe lock the front door?
Let's leave it,
Alex said, her eyes rising to brush over Tom's.
Someone else might find their way up here and need a place to stay. Or maybe the Rangers will come back,
Ellie said.
Maybe.
Let's do this, Tom said, and cranked the ignition. The truck's engine caught with a throaty bellow, and then he dropped the truck into first. Say goodbye, house.
Goodbye, house,
Ellie said. She waited a beat, then added,
So, are we there yet?
Alex and Tom both looked at Ellie, and then at each other, and burst into laughter. That was the last good time. Part 3. The Change. Chapter 30. The gravel fire road was riddled with ruts, and the truck lurched and dipped, the rough stone crunching beneath the tires and pocking against the undercarriage. Their speed was pitiful, and after an hour they'd only covered 10 miles. 3 miles farther on, they hit the paved access road and then made better time, the tires humming over asphalt as they headed due east. After 20 miles, Tom said, Parking lot coming up. That where you left your car? When she nodded, he said, You want to stop? Might be something you want. It was on the tip of her tongue to say that there was nothing of her old life that she wanted at all, other than her aunt. She'd briefly considered asking Tom to head south, not north. He might do that for her, but given the little they'd gleaned, venturing out of the park was dangerous enough. Heading for a major city in a state loaded with nuclear power plants and storage facilities was probably suicidal. They didn't call it Nuclear Illinois for nothing. The first chain reactor ever constructed was squirreled away in squash courts beneath the bleachers of the University of Chicago's Stagg Field. That was where Fermi coined the word scram. Now she only nodded.
Sure.
Wow,
said Ellie as Tom dog-legged left past the park entrance booth. The booth was stone, with a large picture window in front and a sliding glass window on the side, like a serving window at McDonald's. The picture window was smashed, the door hung open, and both the American and state flags puddled on the grass at the base of a large flagpole. The ropes were gone.
Someone was pissed.
Or looking for something they could use. As they pulled around the bend and into the lot, Tom said, I was afraid of that. This late in the season, there wouldn't have been many cars to begin with, and there were only six now in litters of pebbly glass. All the cars had been sacked. Broken windows, open doors, gaping glove compartments, battered trunks, dented fenders. There may not be much left, Tom said. Which one's yours? Alex pointed. Her Toyota stood on the left, in a corner of the lot, near a freestanding shelter with a trio of smashed vending machines. The Toyota was a wreck, and the trunk had been popped, the spare tire left leaning against the rear fender.
Hey!
Said Ellie suddenly and pointed to the right.
Over at the bathrooms, look!
A tall, slight man with a froth of white hair slipped from the side entrance marked women, which would have struck Alex as strange in any other setting. The guy was old, about Jack's age, and clad in dirty jeans and a smeary olive-green parka. One fist gripped a baseball bat. He looked oddly familiar, but Alex didn't recognize him until he pushed a pair of glasses back up the bridge of his nose.
Hey, I know him,
she said, leaning forward for a better look. She told Tom about the school bus.
He was one of the teachers, I'm almost positive.
She saw the guy raise a tentative hand.
Do we stop?
Before Tom could answer, Ellie said,
Of course we do, he's stranded.
When Tom and Alex exchanged looks, Ellie continued,
We have to help him.
No, we don't, said Tom. We already went through this, Ellie. We're bound to see a lot of people who will want what we've got. We can't share with everybody.
Still,
said Ellie. Tom thought about it another second, then braked, threw the truck into neutral, and said to Ellie, You wait here. When she opened her mouth to argue, he added, One word, and I'm driving away.
Fine.
Ellie said grudgingly, then clapped a hand over her mouth with exaggerated drama.
Oops!
Tom tried to keep a straight face, but failed. Then his gaze shifted to Alex, his eyes clicking down to her waist. She read his meaning and thumbed away the Glock's retention strap. It wasn't until she popped the car door that she caught that unmistakable stink of dead meat. The small hairs bristled on the back of her neck. From the flatbed, she heard Mina's anxious whine. Tom, hold up, she said. Tom was already half out of the car, his Winchester in one hand.
What? Mina smells something.
She sniffed the air again, not caring how she must look. The roadkill stink was definitely there. Not strong, but she thought it was close.
Don't you smell that?
Smell what?
I'll be damned,
a man's voice. She turned to see the teacher hurrying over, his long white hair drifting behind like an Old Testament prophet's. A pair of wire-rimmed glasses perched precariously on the bridge of his nose, the right lens riding higher than the left, and gave the old man the look of an absent-minded professor. He said,
Jesus, you're kids! Oh, my God, I don't believe it! When I heard the truck, I thought I was hallucinating.
He stuck out a grimy hand. His knuckles, swollen and gnarled, were scraped raw, and crescents of black rimmed his nails. There was ash on his neck, and to Alex he smelled of smoke and desperation and something she couldn't quite place. The roadkill stink wasn't coming from him, but she smelled the man's fear, no question, and something else, a sharp solvent nip.
He's hiding something.
The thought simply popped into her head.
He's worried about something. Why would she think that?
Larry Mathis.
The old man's eyes drifted to Tom's Winchester and her Glock before fluttering back to their faces.
You don't know how happy I am to see you. Got yourselves a dog, I see. Smart. Real smart. I knew it couldn't be every kid. I tried telling Marlene, but she...
Whoa, whoa, said Tom. Slow down. What are you talking about, every kid? What do you mean having a dog is smart?
Listen to me.
Larry clamped his mouth shut, rubbed a horny palm over his cracked lips.
Sorry. It's just I've been alone, except for people passing through. I haven't seen another soul for, God, maybe 2 weeks.
How long have you been here? Tom asked.
What's the date? Asked Larry.
November 10th,
Alex said. And the attack happened on the 1st of October, so that's how long I've been here.
Larry waved the bat at the bathrooms, and for the first time Alex saw what could only be a large stain of dried blood that had seeped into the wood.
I've been hanging in the ladies' room, cleaner than the men's, and I found a nice couple tents, sleeping bags. There's a caretaker's shed about a quarter mile in, though, and now that it's getting colder, I was thinking of moving, but... He shrugged. Haven't been able to make up my mind.
The choice between bedding down in the ladies' room or a tent didn't seem much of a contest to Alex, and she noticed that the nip of that scent had sharpened. What was that odor? A mix of gun oil and cleaning solvent, she thought. He's lying about something. She couldn't shake the association, for whatever reason. This combination of scents set off a bunch of alarms. Or maybe he's just omitting some detail. But what?
You said there'd been an attack, Tom said. You know this for sure?
What kind?
All I got for sure is what my eyes tell me and what other people say, know what I mean? EMPs, is what I heard. And then I guess the cities got nuked, but some people say it was just the EMPs, and then all the nuclear power plants and storage sites went up on their own. I don't think anyone knows for sure, but I guarantee you it's a mess out there. I've been too scared to make a move out of here.
What have you been living on?
Alex asked. Would I scrounge? I had some supplies left in my pack, and there was vending machine crap in the beginning. Lucky I made it here when I did, before older folks started straggling out of the woods, or there'd have been nothing left. Found this in the booth. He held up the bat. One of the rangers must have fished, too, because there was a rod. So, fish, and, well, like I said, there's a campsite maybe 2 miles west. I've been there a couple times. Bunch of tents and sleeping bags and supplies to pick through, as long as you don't mind the bodies, and scavengers have pretty much taken care of those. I've been getting by.
Bodies? Tom said.
Yeah, you know, most look to be in their 30s, 40s on up. Not a lot of folks, because it's off-season, but Alex interrupted.
No, we don't know. What are you talking about?
Jesus. Larry's myopic gaze clicked from Alex to Tom. You kids really don't know?
For God's sake, just say it, Larry, Tom said. So he told them.
When Larry was done, Alex felt as if she'd stepped into a kind of breathless pause. Through the roar in her ears, she heard Tom.
That can't be right. Everyone? No exceptions?
Well, you two are, so there must be some. Son, I'm only telling you what I've heard. The rumors might be wrong, but if they are, they're all the same wrong coming from everybody who's been through. Now, that's no more than 30 people, so take it with a grain of salt. But based on what I've seen and heard, I believe it. The people who dropped right away were mostly adults in their early 20s on up. There seems to be some kind of cutoff around 60, 65, but I'll bet some really old people dropped too. But other than me, you two, and that little girl in your truck... The youngest person I've seen come through here so far was 66. Her husband was younger, 59, and he keeled over in the first couple of minutes. Larry snapped his fingers. Gone. Just like that.
How old are you? Tom asked.
62, and still ticking, thank God. Larry eyed Tom.
You with anyone older when it happened?
Two guys. Tom swallowed. One died right away. He was maybe 40. The other one, he'd just turned 65, and he was fine after the attack. But my friend... His voice faded.
Young, like you?
A few years older.
Close enough. Larry's eyes narrowed.
He changed, didn't he? Started losing track, looking lost.
Tom gave a reluctant nod.
Then he got... He went crazy.
He went wild, Larry said flatly. I tell you what, you're lucky he didn't change in the first couple of minutes, or you probably wouldn't be standing here. From what I heard, all those people passing through, kids your age and younger, they change fast.
But that's just it. I haven't changed. Alex is fine, and so is...
Tom broke off.
People panic. Those are just rumors.
No, wait. Larry was with a bunch of kids, Alex said. To the older man, I saw you at a Quick Mart right across the Michigan border.
That was us, Larry said. I teach... taught bio. We're on our fall and winter ecology unit. Me, my daughter, 8 kids from the class, and 3 other chaperones.
Larry's gaze slewed sideways to fix on a spot on the ground.
Marlene, she taught chemistry, about my age. She was the only other chaperone to make it out.
What happened to everybody else? Asked Tom.
Larry's eyes watered, and he swallowed, the knob of his Adam's apple bobbing.
I just told you. You look like a smart young man.
Why you think I got the bat?
All the kids changed,
Alex said. Her voice sounded thin and strained in her ears.
Yeah. Larry was blinking rapidly. Well, not all of them at once.
Really?
Alex and Tom looked at each other, and then Alex said,
How many didn't?
3. A couple kids changed right away, and then the others started maybe half a day later. One kid didn't show signs for almost 2 days.
Was there any pattern? Asked Alex. Like age or...
No. The first 2 killed Harriet. She taught advanced bio. She was early 60s, I think. Her husband, Frank, was already dead.
What happened then? Tom asked.
Larry looked almost angry.
What do you think? We ran like hell, me and Marlene and the other kids. Took us a couple days to get out of the woods. The wild ones followed us and got one of the kids who hadn't turned that very first night. It was awful, and we couldn't... There wasn't anything we could do.
Larry's voice cracked. My daughter, Deidre, was the only kid to make it out. But once we got to the bus, Marlene took off. Just scrambled on, locked the door, and drove out.
He shook his head. That bus was so old, I probably rode it when I was a kid. That's the only reason she was able to drive off, too.
And she always said district budget cuts never did anyone a lick of good.
And she just left you?
She wouldn't take Dee, and I wouldn't leave without her, so... He spread his hands. Here I am. You're the first young people I've seen pass through. I knew there had to be some left. There was just too much variability in who changed when.
Does anyone know why it's happening at all? Asked Tom.
I teach high school biology. I sure as hell don't know. Maybe brain chemistry or something about hormones?
Larry's eyes slid away again, but not before Alex caught another surge of that solvent nip. Then she had it, what he was hiding.
Larry, where's your daughter?
For a moment, she thought Larry would try to lie. In the end, he just looked defeated.
This way.
Larry inclined his head toward the bathrooms. You should probably make sure the little girl stays put.
Well,
Alex thought as her gaze roved over the handicapped stall, at least we know who took the rope from those flagpoles. Larry had used the handicapped stall for obvious reasons. It was bigger, and there were the rails, which were handy for restraining someone. Either the girl was asleep, or more likely unconscious, judging from the crust of blood caking the left side of the girl's head. Her hands were bound behind her back, and more rope was looped around her middle, which Larry had then tied off around a rail. The dead meat stink was very strong now.
Deidre, said Larry.
His lips trembled, and he rubbed at them with one shaking hand.
She's only 13.
I don't blame Marlene. I really don't, not after what we saw.
But I couldn't leave Dee. I only hit her the one time when she came after me. That was enough, though. I know I can't.
His voice firmed.
The change might not be permanent.
Tom touched the old man's shoulder. How long has she been like this, Larry?
Out of control? Only the last 4 or 5 days. But the change started about 2, 3 weeks ago, I guess. She started complaining about not feeling right. Lost her appetite, and her mood changed, and then... Well, she's a little bit of a late bloomer. That's all I thought it was.
The confusion was clear on Tom's face, but Alex understood. Late bloomer. Her eyes found a battered white napkin dispenser hung from one wall, its cover open to reveal a stack of small gray cardboard boxes. Larry must have broken it open.
She started her period.
First time. She got worse about 3 days after, and that was maybe a week ago.
Slow tears trickled into the deep rills on either side of Larry's nose.
Now she's only getting weaker. She'll drink, but anything solid I get into her mouth, she spits out. The last couple times I got close, she's tried to bite. He skimmed tears from his face with the back of his hand. Breaks my heart, you know. In some ways, she's still kind of a typical teenager, like always waking up just when I'm ready to sleep. She'll stay up all night and only nod off again a couple hours after sunrise.
Hormonal changes. Puberty?
Alex stared down at the unconscious girl. Her periods had completely stopped over a year ago, a side effect of her many rounds of chemo, or the monster itself, Barrett didn't know which. And how did hormones or puberty explain Tom? He was her age, way past puberty. And what about boys in general?
Since boys and girls were different, hormones couldn't be the only reason, could they?
Larry, Tom said, I'm sorry, but we can't take her with us. He wasn't brutal about it, just factual.
Even if this might turn itself around, we don't know that.
I know. I wasn't going to ask. Everyone who comes through takes one look, and then it's... Larry wiped the air with one hand. Adios, muchachos.
You could come with us,
Alex said. I'm not leaving my daughter.
The hell of it is, she might not die if I let her go. But that would mean she'd go after...
Larry swallowed.
I can't do that either.
Tom asked,
What do you want, Larry?
I can't... Larry took a weak swipe at the air with the bat. I can't do that. But you have guns. I'm not asking you to, you understand, but I only need two.
To what?
Asked Alex.
Larry, said Tom, there's no need for you to do this. I could...
To what?
Alex repeated, and then she got it.
No, Tom, you can't give him...
No. Larry put a hand on Tom's shoulder and gave it a squeeze.
You seem like a fine young man, and I appreciate it, I do. But there are some things you're still too young for. She's my daughter. If anyone does this, it should be me.
After a brief silence, Larry added,
Please, don't make me beg.
Tom studied Larry a moment longer, then reached around for the cig and withdrew it from its holster.
Tom,
Alex said. Tom did not reply. Instead, he quickly jacked out the magazine, popped out every bullet except one, then reseated the clip.
What are you doing?
Alex asked. Tom checked the safety and then proffered the pistol, grip first.
Careful, there's already one in the chamber.
Thank you. Larry wrapped his hand around the butt. I'll take it from here. Tom didn't let go of the pistol.
You don't have to do this. All it would take would be the one.
But I'd always remember. No parent should have to live with that. Larry gave a slow, sad smile.
A word of advice. You two and the little girl?
There's a lot of anger out there, and fear. People'll either shoot you or decide you're worth your weight in gold.
What do you mean?
I mean, you're an endangered species. I don't know about the rest of the world, but we had 8 kids in our group when we started, and not one survived. So you be very careful. Larry clapped Tom on the shoulder again. Go on now. I'll wait until you're gone.
That took a long time,
Ellie said as they piled into the truck.
Isn't he coming with us?
No, honey. Tom cranked the truck starter and the engine caught with a roar. He decided to stay behind.
Why?
Then her eyes fell to Tom's waist and narrowed in suspicion.
Where's your gun?
We better go,
Alex said. Ellie looked from Tom to Alex and then back to Tom, and Alex saw the moment the light bulb went off. A look of betrayal replaced the confusion, and Ellie's lower lip began to tremble.
My daddy would never have done that.
Alex put a hand on the girl's arm.
Ellie, that's not fair.
The little girl shook her off.
Don't stick up for him just because he's your boyfriend.
Alex's cheeks flamed.
He's not.
You're supposed to help, the little girl said to Tom.
You're supposed to save people. That's your job.
I did help him, Ellie, said Tom with an effort. It's just not as simple as you think. Everything's different. Nothing's simple anymore.
That's not true. Good guys don't help people die. My daddy would never...
Tom rounded on her. Well, I'm not your dad, all right? Your dad is dead, and I'm doing the best I can. Now, I'm sorry if that's not good enough for you, but give me a break already. I didn't ask for this, and I didn't ask for you. He clamped his mouth shut, but the damage was done. Ellie's face went as still as polished marble.
Okay.
She didn't cry or shout, and every word cut the air as cleanly as a razor.
Fine.
Tom was gray. Ellie, honey, I'm sorry.
Don't call me that,
Ellie said in her new deadly voice.
Don't ever call me honey again. Only my daddy called me that. And like you said, you're not my daddy.
Alex was almost afraid to breathe. Ellie turned away and stared straight ahead. Without another word, Tom butted the truck into first, and they left.
Chapter 31 After Larry's warning, they decided to stick to forested country roads. This also meant that they couldn't go very quickly, either. The roads weren't in great shape and tended to swerve and curl, so they weren't able to lay down many miles. The only saving grace was that the snow held off. Alex drove, while Tom literally rode shotgun, ready to blast anyone who might come roaring out of the woods to steal the truck or kill them or both. But no one came, and they saw no brain-zapped kids either. Alex kept her window cracked. For air, she said, but she didn't catch a scent that raised any alarms. They passed by a few mailboxes at the end of narrow dirt roads. Presumably there were houses back there, but they saw no one. They did come to a single farm, but the house was dark and looked deserted, and in the air big black birds wheeled. The sight set off a fluttery feeling in Alex's chest, and then she got a big noseful of rot, but it was real rot this time. She spotted lumps of soggy wool in a muddy enclosed paddock, sheep that had died of starvation, and as they rolled past a fenced-in field, the chug of the truck made the crows whirl up in a cloud. In another moment, they'd settled back to feed on the cows, most so bloated they looked like balloons about to burst. Vultures quarreled over the bodies, and Alex spotted two sleek gray foxes playing tug-of-war with a tangle of guts. The only animal still standing in the field was a tired-looking old dray horse calmly munching on a clump of weeds. The horse's head lifted as they passed. Hold up. Hopping from the truck, Tom unlatched the fence's gate, then climbed back in. For when it runs out of grass, it'll be okay.
Why didn't you just shoot it?
Ellie muttered, but Tom didn't answer. When night fell, they'd managed a little under 90 miles, the last 20 on a snaky scratch of earth no wider than the truck. The ranger map was useless. The thin red squiggle marking the fire road had changed over to hyphens, a polite topographical symbol for an unimproved road. If the tall switches of dead grass sprouting in a mohawk down the very center were to be believed, no one had been on this road, really nothing more than a cut in the dirt, in years. The truck bounced and jounced in a squall of worn shocks as their speed dropped from 30 to 20 to 10, and night leaked into the dense clouds, inking them black.
"We need to stop," Alex said. "Even with headlights, this is impossible."
I know. Over there. Tom gestured to the right. Looks like part of an old fence. In the dimming light, Alex spotted a jagged post, listing like the Tower of Pisa. Beyond, the ground was level, open, and overgrown, probably part of an old pasture gone to seed. She braked, jockeyed the stick into neutral, then killed the engine.
I think this takes being off the beaten path to a whole new level.
Yeah. Tom popped his door and swung out. Come on, let's set up the tent. Ellie, Mina needs to be let out. Ellie said nothing. But when Alex slid from the cab, the girl scooted out, waited until Tom had dropped the tailgate, and clambered onto the flatbed. Careful where you step, Tom said. He held out a flashlight. They might have used barbed wire for the fence.
I'm not talking to you, said Ellie, digging into her Hello Kitty backpack. And I have my own flashlight. Best thing is to leave her alone.
Alex watched the bob of Ellie's torch and saw the dog weaving in and out of the light, its nose to the ground. Yeah. Tom stood, arms akimbo, looking after Ellie as she waded through the field. I really screwed up.
Hey, you're always talking about cutting myself a break. What about you? She's just a kid. Come on, let's set up the tents and get a fire going. We'll all feel better after we eat something.
As they pitched the tent, she said,
I know you don't want to hear this, and I know I wasn't much help back there, but now I think you did the right thing for Larry.
Tom was pounding in a steak, so his face was hidden. I'm having a hard time believing that.
Did you ever... I mean, over in Afghanistan, did you...
Kill someone because he asked me to?
A mercy killing?
Now Tom looked up. No. I know this will sound stupid, but there's killing the enemy, and then there's flat-out murder.
There was this one guy in my squad. Name was Crow.
He was all torn up. This EFP, explosively formed penetrator, blasted right through the Humvee and his helmet. Took out most of his face and half his skull. Didn't kill him, and when I got to him, he was conscious. So I was holding his hand, you know, telling him to hang on, and Crow looked right at me, well, with the one eye that was left, and he said, clear as a bell, kill me. I heard him okay, but I pretended I didn't. So Crow said it again, and kept on until he passed out. One of his buddies went to see him later, and Crow said, you tell that son of a bitch Eden he fucked up.
He survived?
Oh, yeah. Haven't you heard? The war's been great training for those brain surgeons. The upside is you live. The downside is you won't want to spend a lot of time around mirrors, assuming you're not a vegetable. Why do you think he wanted me to kill him?
But he is alive. He might not think that way now, Tom.
Alex, he was our age. Tom gave the steak a final savage whack. If Larry's right, I'll give you 3 guesses what Crow's like now. Ellie spent the evening not eating and avoided them both. When Tom tried talking to her, the girl resolutely stared at the ground and hugged the dog until Tom gave up. Shortly thereafter, Ellie took Mina and ducked into the tent. For the next hour, Tom and Alex huddled over a road atlas they'd found at the ranger station.
Maybe we should double back,
Alex said. I hate doing that. It's just a waste of gas and time. Look, the map says this level's out, and we already know this is farmland, right? So there will be other houses along the way, which means that the roads will have to get better. We keep on this, eventually it'll feed into that fire road, and that'll take us northwest, up around Oran.
Big town.
Yeah, and a lot of people.
How far?
40, 50 miles, give or take.
And the other choice?
We head southwest and then cut west. There's an old mine there and a pretty small town about 30 miles north of the mine. Actually, it doesn't look like more than a village. He squinted close to read the name. Rule.
So that might be better. Fewer people, anyway.
Maybe. I just wish I'd thought to stop at that farm. Might have been a truck or car and some gas. He shook his head, his breath pluming. Man, I'm not thinking straight.
You're doing way better than I could. I couldn't shoot anyone I know, and you cared about Jim.
No. Staring into the fire, he sighed and let his hands dangle between his knees. I mean, yeah, I did. But that's not all of it. Remember I said that I tracked him? Well, I had Jim twice before. I could have taken him out, and probably should have. But I didn't. I was like Larry. It was like Crow all over again. I kept thinking, what if I was wrong? Maybe he'd snap out of it and be Jim again. I just couldn't do it. And then it was almost too late. If Ellie hadn't screamed.
But she did. And then you saved us.
Their eyes locked. And then he reached over and cupped her face with one hand. Maybe we saved each other, he said. Alex took the first watch.
Go on. I'll wake you up around one, I promise.
Tom glanced toward the tent into which Ellie had disappeared an hour or two before. I'm thinking I'd just as soon not risk waking her up. I'll put up the pup tent against the truck and sleep there. Midnight came. There were no stars and no moon, for which Alex was grateful. As she fed the fire, she wondered dreamily how long it would take for the moon to go back to the way it had been.
Years?
She yawned. The fire's warmth toasted her face and hands. Her back was cold, but the cold helped keep her alert. She thought about Tom, too. She wasn't sure what was happening or what all this meant. Her whole body hummed, hungry for his touch. It wasn't lust. It was the desire to be close, to be held by him. She'd never had a boyfriend, never been kissed. There'd been one guy, very hot, a moony sophomore with long eyelashes named Shane. They'd gone out as part of a pack and swapped shy glances, but never hooked up. Then her parents died, and it was like she became radioactive, as if her friends weren't sure if having a good time was allowed, so they stayed away. Then she'd moved in with her aunt, changed schools, got to be the new kid in midstream. Then came the diagnosis, and her world became an endless round of therapy and hospitals and doctors. She glanced over at Tom's pup tent.
Had he thought about her before he fell asleep?
Actually, knowing Tom, he might still be awake. So, what would happen if she slipped into his tent? Or what if nothing happened? God, she could see it now. Tom trying to let her down easy, telling her that they're under a lot of stress, and this isn't the best way to start a relationship. Leave it, she decided. She didn't want to know. The hour mitten on Ellie's Mickey Mouse watch hit one. Alex decided to let Tom sleep another hour, which became two, and slipped into three, and then... A prod at her back.
Alex?
What? She jammed awake, stiff and very cold. Fumbling with the Mossberg, trying to turn at the same time, she almost fell from her perch.
Whoa, it's just me,
Ellie said. Mina was by her side, grinning, her tail whisking in the chill air. The night was nearly over, and dawn showed as a dull pewter smudge on the horizon. Snow sifted down in a fine salt.
Ellie, she huffed out in relief, her breath coming in a cloud. Don't do that. I'm sorry, but you wouldn't wake up.
Ellie pointed.
The fire's out. I would have started it, but I was afraid I'd burn you.
Oh. Now she saw that the little girl was cradling a sack of kindling. She glanced at Ellie's watch. 7 o'clock. Beyond, she saw that Tom's tent was still sealed up tight. Unusual for him.
I guess I was tired. Can I go ahead and...
Sure. She crouched alongside the dead fire as the girl slid her kindling onto the frosted grass. Mina came to press against Alex's side and moaned as Alex ruffled the dog's ears.
You want me to help?
Alex asked.
No, I got it,
Ellie said. She worked in silence, sweeping away dead cold ash and then mounding fuel. Alex watched as Ellie touched a match to shredded wood and what looked like milkweed.
Where do you find the fluff? Over by the woods,
Ellie said, not looking up. She blew a slow, even breath, and a tiny orange bloom flared as the tinder caught with a crackle. Ellie carefully fed thin twigs to the flames.
I didn't go alone. I took Mina, and I've got the whistle. I wasn't criticizing. You're doing great. Oh.
Eyes still on the fire, Ellie chewed on her lower lip.
I'm sorry about yesterday. I shouldn't have yelled.
Ellie's pigtails were crooked, hair corkscrewing out in unruly tufts. Reaching over, Alex hooked an errant blonde curl behind the girl's left ear.
You were upset with Tom. Me too.
Ellie cut a quick sidelong glance.
You were?
Yeah, I didn't think what he did was right.
What about now?
I understand better. I think Tom's doing the best he can. We all are.
I don't want him to hate me.
Ellie's eyes pooled.
I don't want anything to happen to you guys.
She wanted to promise that nothing would. Instead, she opened her arms.
Come here.
Face knotted against a sob, the girl slid into her embrace, pressing her face to Alex's neck as Alex gathered her up and held her tight. Whining, Mina danced back, then came to lean against Alex. After a few moments, Alex felt the girl relax and her muscles soften, and then Ellie's scent became fuller, nutmeg and warm vanilla. No one moved or said anything, except for the dog, which sighed and nosed Ellie's hair. Beyond the orange rose of the fire, Alex saw Tom's tent shiver, heard the smooth zip as he opened the front flap, and then he was pushing his way out. His thick hair was mussed, and his face was still creased with sleep. Alex, why? He stopped when he spotted them, and stood, uncertain. Wordlessly, Ellie left Alex and made a beeline for Tom, who knelt as the girl flung herself against his chest.
I'm sorry,
Ellie said, her voice muffled by Tom's shirt.
Please don't hate me, Tom.
I could never hate you, honey, Tom said. His arms hugged Ellie, but his eyes were on Alex. I'm so sorry. I'll try really hard never to hurt you again.
Me too.
Arming away tears, Ellie gave him a shaky smile.
I made the fire.
By yourself?
All by herself.
Alex swallowed against a sudden tightness in her throat.
Why don't you get cleaned up? I'll get breakfast going. Can I take Mina for a walk?
Ellie asked. When Tom hesitated, she continued,
I'll be careful. I went out yesterday, and it was fine, and I had to get stuff for the fire this morning.
Sure. He chucked her under the chin. Don't go too far, okay?
Okay.
And then Ellie darted in and startled him with a swift, hard kiss on the cheek.
Come on, Mina,
she called, dancing away. The dog took three steps, paused, and then, tail wagging, looked back at Alex.
Don't look at me,
Alex said to the dog. I have to make breakfast.
Mina!
Ellie stood in a thicket of brown meadow grass so high it brushed the girl's waist. Snow billowed around her shoulders in a soft, fine curtain.
Come on! Go on, girl,
Alex said, puzzled. She watched as the dog gave her a reproachful look before bounding after Ellie. She turned to look up at Tom as he came to stand alongside. Well, that was weird. The dog, I mean. Probably just hungry, Tom said absently, staring after the pair, already partially obscured behind a veil of swirling snow.
She really cares about you, and I care about both of you,
he said, still staring after Ellie, although there was nothing to see now but snow. I meant what I said, too. I would never hurt her, or you. I'd rather... He shook his head.
Hey.
Close up, she saw that his cheeks were hectic with color, his smell was warm and lush. She wished she could be like Ellie and simply go to him, no questions asked.
I feel the same way.
He looked down at her, the snow clinging in delicate, perfect flakes to his hair.
You mean that?
They were close enough that she saw the throb of his pulse in his neck.
Yes,
she said.
I mean it.
Then I want you to promise me something, he said. She heard the wild, hard drum of her heart.
What?
Promise me that if I change, Tom said, you'll kill me. Chapter 32.
What?
She stared, open-mouthed.
Are you crazy? I'm not going to promise anything like that.
Alex, you have to. His eyes blazed. This isn't a game. We don't know what's going to happen.
I could change. I could hurt you or Ellie. I might not be able to help myself, so you can't hesitate. If I start to change, you have to do it.
Why are we talking about this?
She stumbled back a half step.
I'm not having this conversation.
His hand flashed and hooked onto her arm. Running away won't help. We have to talk about this now while we still can.
Tom, it's been weeks.
We don't know if that means we're safe. She knew that.
Why are you assuming it might be you? It could be all of us. It could be me or Ellie.
He was shaking his head. Not Ellie. I think she's too young. You said it yourself. Larry's kid got her period. Her hormones.
I know what I said.
She wrenched her arm free.
Hormones can't be all of it. Girls and boys aren't the same that way. And then there's Jim.
He changed, but only after a couple days, while the kids I saw changed the very first day, after 6 or 7 hours. Larry said some kids in their group changed right away. So it's got to be way more complicated than just hormones or age. When his face set, she said,
Tom, if I changed, would you shoot me? Without knowing if the change is permanent?
An arrow of indecision flicked through his eyes, there and then gone in a second, but a sharp nip she'd first caught from Larry, the mingled scent of cleaning solvent and gun oil, leaked from his skin. He pulled himself straighter. Yes, I would. I'm not saying it would be easy, but even without the scent to give him away, she knew the truth.
You're a liar. Your friend begged you and you couldn't do it. I know you're a soldier, Tom, but you're not a killer, and neither am I.
But I did kill Jim.
That was different.
No, it wasn't. It came down to deciding who should die. His tone was steely, almost angry. Don't ever tell me I can't do what needs to be done.
I'm not saying that, she said with less heat than before. But aren't you the one who said this was fate? That you refused to give up?
I'm not giving up. I'm trying to think ahead. Look, if you changed, if there was the slightest chance that you'd hurt me or Ellie, would you want me to do nothing? Just let it happen?
No.
All the fight dribbled out of her, and she felt her shoulders slump.
I don't want to hurt anybody. You, least of all.
Well, me neither. So we have to promise each other.
Stepping closer, he reached for her hands, cradling them in his.
Please, Alex. I need to know you'll do whatever it takes to keep you and Ellie safe. She wanted to promise, she really did. But there was something he'd said last night that made her pause. Maybe we saved each other.
Why would Tom need saving? From what? Whom?
She thought of all those endless nights when Tom, brave and now so ready to sacrifice himself, had not slept. Last night, though, he had, and straight through. So what had changed? Maybe we saved each other. Was that it? What could she save Tom from? Going back to war? Maybe. He'd thought of Canada, knew how far away the border was. Was that it? Or had he come here looking for some sign, for his fate? Had he been saved from himself?
Tom, she said, why did you come here? You don't live here. You don't belong here. You said finding Ellie and me, being there at the moment you were needed most, was fate. Is fate what you came here to find? Or are you looking for something else?
She reached a hand to his cheek. Her fingers were icy, but his skin was hot.
Tom, did you come here to die?
They were questions she could have asked herself. His scent altered, and then she heard his sharp intake of breath, felt his shock beneath her hand, and knew her words had found their mark. His face twisted with some strong emotion, and then he was pressing her hand against his cheek.
Alex, he said hoarsely, you can't imagine what I've done.
A shrill note, sharp and clear, pierced the air. Alex gasped, her breath bawling in her throat. She knew that sound. It was the whistle she'd given Ellie.
You blow on that, they'll hear it in the next state.
Tom, she said urgently. Ellie, I know. Tom was already moving, darting toward his tent, reaching in and coming up with the Winchester. The whistle came again, its call as crisp and distinct as a bolt of bright light in an otherwise darkened room, and now she could hear the dog barking, faint but unmistakable.
Tom started for the weedy field. Come on! Grabbing the mossberg, she held it over her head as she thrashed through the overgrowth after Tom, who was taller with longer legs and would have outdistanced her on level ground. Running on asphalt or a track was much different than wading through high grass, and her boots felt heavy and clumsy in weeds that seemed to have grown long, sinewy fingers to wrap and tug at her ankles. Farther ahead, Tom was at the edge of the woods, but he paused to look back. Go! Alex waved him on. She could hear the dog barking again. I'll be right there! Tom nodded, turned, disappeared into the trees. A minute later, Alex struggled out of the field, but Tom was already out of sight. The line of demarcation between field and forest was abrupt, the grass immediately giving way to a tangle of brush edging the trees, and then, farther in, a deadening carpet of pine needles already dusted with snow. Somewhere ahead, she heard the dog. Ellie! She began to run again. The woods were duller than the field, the light not penetrating well this early in the morning, and the air smelled dank and cold. There were too many contrasting odors. She couldn't pull Ellie's, Tom's, or even Mina's out of the mix. The whistle came again, and the dog's barks had grown frantic, high-pitched, almost continuous. Something wrong. Her boots thudded on frozen earth. Something's wrong. Something's not right. Straight ahead, through the trees, she caught a glimpse of broken sky, a clearing, and then, just a little farther on, a flash of rust-red that was Tom's parka. The dog was a sable blur, dancing around Tom's legs before bolting away again. She opened her mouth to call out, but something about Tom's posture made her voice die in her chest. She heard Tom call Mina, and then make a grab for the dog's collar. Why? She slowed. And then her nose wrinkled against a sudden, musty melange. Fried onions, dirty socks, and rotten teeth. Behind her. With a muffled gasp, she pivoted, her thumb already pushing against the safety. The woman was sallow and pinched, with a frizz of gray hair. Maybe in another life, and before this nightmare, she'd baked chocolate chip cookies for the grandkids. But not now. She sighted her rifle on Alex's chest. Don't! Chapter 33
Is she dead?
Asked Ellie.
I can't tell.
They'd backed Alex and Ellie away from the truck, and Alex had to crane her head to peer into the high grass. She could just make out the dog sprawled on the snow-dusted ground and wished she'd known the command for shut up. Unfortunately, she hadn't.
And when the dog wouldn't stop barking, one of the two men, who were both pretty old, about Larry's age, Alex thought,
had decided his rifle made for a great baseball bat, too. Maybe that was good. A wallop to the head, the dog stood a chance. A bullet, and it would have been over. Alex saw the dog's chest struggle to rise, and then fall, and then rise again.
No, she's breathing. They just knocked her out. They made me blow the whistle.
Ellie glared up at the woman.
She said they'd shoot Mina if I didn't.
From behind her rifle, the woman said,
I still might. You don't shut up.
It's okay, Ellie.
Alex turned her attention to Tom, who was breaking down the big tent. The older of the two men kept a rifle trained on Tom's back as he worked. The one who'd